When the guys asked me what my perfect night would be, I told them the truth. Beer and board games. They thought I was kidding. I was not kidding.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means that it is episode 138 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast. I am one of your hosts. My name is Eric Walquist. And joining me this week, as he does every week, is your other host.
I am one of your hosts, Jesse Wilson.
Jesse, thank you so much for being on the podcast this week. I am recording from Palm Springs, California. I am on my honeymoon right now.
Yeah, you are.
And I'm podcasting for all of our listeners, so I hope they appreciate that. I mean, my wife hopes they appreciate that.
Yeah. If there is appreciation to be given, I think it should be to a man taking time out of his honeymoon to record a podcast for free.
For free for life. Well, you know, I wanted this honeymoon to be about things that I enjoy doing. And I enjoy podcasting.
Wife.
I enjoy podcasting. Yes, mainly my wife. I don't, this doesn't sound good. Maybe I should just hang up.
No, you're good.
All right, we're good. We're good. We're good. We're good. Lydia, are you okay with me podcasting?
Yes.
Okay, we have the vocal approval here. Okay, so in that vein, I would
like... I know you have that sound clip saved, Eric.
I have numerous... I built a soundboard so that I can prank call Lydia's mom with her voice.
That would be so funny.
only to the person, but that would be ridiculous. Did you call me last night? No, I didn't call you. In that vein, I have to dedicate this week's episode to my wife, Lydia, for letting me not only podcast tonight, but podcast every week to all of our listeners. And she listens to all the shows.
Mm-hmm. That's a good dedication.
It was actually, that's one of the ways that I knew she liked me, because right when we started getting to know each other, she told me that she listened to my podcast. And she had been listening to a few of the back episodes, and I was like, oh, she probably likes me then. I better marry her.
Yeah. Seriously, because, like, when I talk to someone in person who says, I listen to your podcast, my immediate reaction is like, oh, God, no.
Oh, damn it.
Uh-oh.
So, anyway, this one goes out to my lovely wife, Lydia Snap. I guess her name's Lydia Walquist now, but I love her.
Lydia Snap Walquist.
Lydia Snap Walquist. With that, Jesse, what are you drinking this week?
I am drinking a spring seasonal from Snoqualmie, which is brewed in Snoqualmie, Washington, and it's the Spring Fever Belgian Style Grand Cru Ale, a Belgian style ale brewed with coriander.
Oh, coriander.
Right, and I've never had this one before, and I actually just spilled it all over myself, so that's great. Oh, overflowing. Oh, gold. I need a towel.
I think that...
Oh, dear God. I'll be right back. Fill the air.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, just in case I need to recap that for you, what you were hearing was... Jesse opening a bottle of beer, having it begin to overflow, then he stuck his mouth over the top of it, and then breathed through his nose until the beer subsided, and then he went to run and grab a towel to wipe off the beer, supposedly from himself and also from the table.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, good. great job.
Yeah, I like it. It revolted against me.
Well, that'll happen.
Overflowed all over me. Now I'm a sticky mess.
Well, I'm drinking this week. I'm drinking Tecate because I'm in Southern California. And for some reason, when you're in Seattle, Tecate is ridiculously overpriced. But down here in SoCal, you could get a 30-pack of Tecate for $18. So it's
sounds about right.
Yeah, it's basically the Rainier of the Southwest. And I love it. Put a little lime in it. It's a nice little, it's a refreshing cerveza when it's 90 degrees out.
Yeah, I actually have, since we're talking about it, let me flip to it real quick. I have the latest issue of BevNet, the Beverage Insider magazine, and they have some statistics on drink trends, including Tecate. It's going to take me a second to find. Oh, here we are.
Okay.
So, an import beer, Dos Equis Lager, is up 33.98% over last year.
Ah.
Isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah, I love Dos Equis, dude.
And Tecate is down by 0.7%.
Well, I think that Dos Equis is coming on Tecate a little bit because I don't like paying $1 a beer for Tecate, but I don't mind paying $1 a beer for Dos Equis. So up in Seattle, if they're the same price, I'm going with Dos Equis.
You know what's taking a real big hit, though?
What?
Is Labatt Blue, down 11%.
That'll happen.
So I guess it's a battle between Mexico and Canada right now.
I guess so. It's just like the World Baseball Classic Brawl.
Yeah, I heard about that. I didn't see that.
It was insane. That I was hoping I could talk to you about that because, like, it made me think of our friends up in Edmonton, for the Hex 19 guys, because if you're – so, you know, brawls happen in baseball, but usually it's, like, just a little pushing around. And, like, they clear the benches, but basically everybody just stands there and looks at each other. And maybe there's, like, a little tussle, but it's basically just broken up. In the World Baseball Classic game between Canada and Mexico, it was an all-out brawl. And I think that the thing that people need to keep in mind is that if you're going to start a fight, don't start a fight with Canadians. Because they all played hockey, which means that they know how to fight. Like, everybody in Canada plays hockey. Like, everybody knows that fighting, they're just waiting for their next moment to punch somebody in the face. So the moment that the fight began, all of the Canadians just came out flailing, and it turned into an all-out brawl. I've never seen a brawl like that in a baseball game.
That's hilarious. That's such a good point. I think that the Toronto Blue Jays should be given one brawl, like, one hockey-style fight per game.
Yeah.
One player on the Blue Jays team can pick one fight once per game with the same rules of, like, a hockey fight.
Well, instead of five for fighting, you get five outs for fighting. You have to sit out for five outs.
Five outs. Oh, okay. Not the team suffers five outs.
No, you do five outs. You have to sit out for five outs.
There you go.
There you go. Solved. Problem solved.
Eric, how much money do you think Corona Extra is worth in the last year?
$12.5 million.
$1.14 billion with a B.
What?
Yep. That's the number one exporter. Second to that is... Or import to the U.S. Second to that is Heineken with $600 million.
Well,
but Corona far and away the leader with $1.1 billion.
Well, that's why you should never ask me about your commodity trading. So we're going to move on to some listener feedback this week. We got some great emails, we even got a voicemail this week we're very excited about. And I want to start off with Joseph Hallett. Joseph is a guy that Aaron and I met last year at PAX when we had our Bald Move meetup then. And he gave us some insight on our last show. He says, I really like The Hobbit better than the trilogy as well. Not to diminish the trilogy at all. I just love The Hobbit. He's on my side there. What do you think about sci-fi's series/game starting in April called Defiance? You guys don't talk about much about MMORPGs. I am curious about it. I like the angle building or binding TV entertainment and content with an RPG. I'd love to hear your insight. And we actually talked to the Defiance guys at last year's PAX. It seems like a cool idea. I just think it's super hard to pull it off.
Yeah, we'll see how they do in the execution. That being said, though, like, if they made, like, a Mass Effect show on the Sci-Fi Channel,
mm-hmm.
it would be hugely popular.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, this is, I mean, basically Defiance is kind of like that. I guess it's kind of like a alien invasion show. I mean, you know, Mass Effect has a lot of things going for it than just alien invasion, but,
right.
You know, it's sci-fi aliens, and apparently, you know, you'll be playing a game and choices that people make in the MMORPG will affect the plot of the show. That's the whole kind of, point behind it.
Right.
You know, it sounds like a cool thing. I think integrated storytelling where viewers get to choose the paths of how things turn out. You know, a lot of time that gets really railroaded, and probably for good reason. You know, there's a reason why there are storytellers because they have these stories and they want to tell them their own way. The public doesn't always have the best insight on how a story should be told. But at the same time, this is sci-fi, so they don't exactly have like a strong track record that they're going to diminish. I mean, they have Battlestar Galactica.
Massive bird on Return to Raptor Island.
Well, Return to Raptor Island, I mean, they can't all be that. You know?
Return to Raptor Island, that was excellent.
The Return to Raptor Island franchise is one of those things that only comes along once in a generation.
That's true.
I've heard multiple times that Return to Raptor Island is the Michael Jackson of our time. And I can't dispute that. But the rest of what's been happening with sci-fi, they're trying to fill the hole of Battlestar Galactica. And, you know, Cable's a place that is getting a lot of cred lately. So if they could pull this off, you might see more stuff like this in the future. We'll see how it goes.
I think the first move that sci-fi needs to do is to change their name back to sci-fi instead of Syfy.
Yeah.
I hate that so much. The SYFY is so stupid. Why would you do that? That was such a brain dead corporate move that has no substance and was just done to like shake things up.
I think that they need to change the name in honor of Gangnam Style to PSIFY or PSYFY, whatever. You get the joke.
Uh huh.
I'm on vacation.
You get the joke.
You get the joke.
You'd be a great stand-up comedian.
Thank you. Yeah, he's the you get the joke guy. All right. And then we also got an email from Mark Crone or Crane, all the way from Australia. Now, Mark did write us. He told us he was from Australia, and he didn't send us a voicemail, which means I have to read this in an Australian accent. But... Mm-hmm. This is a great email, and it literally brought a tear to my eye. So here we go. Here's Mark. G'day, personal arrogance boys. Mark, everyone calls me Crunchy from South Australia here. Wanted to say, great podcast, lads. I have a couple of recos that you might find interesting. I'm a geek dad of 3 kids, 8, 6, and 2 years old, and have recently taken inspiration from your discussions to start nerding it up with them. This Christmas, Santa brought my 8-year-old son and I magic cards, and we have been learning the game together on the back of you guys talking up the game so much. So far, we have not made our own decks, just keep it 6 store-bought decks from 2013 core set, and I find the results are pretty even, which makes it fun for both of us. We use an iPad app called Magic's Little Helper to keep all the game scores for us, no dice or pencils needed. But it also keeps the match statistics, so it's interesting to see that we played each other 30 times for exactly 15 wins each. It's been great fun playing Magic with my son and seeing his imagination blow up over different monsters, tactics, and such. It has even helped improve his reading and simple maths. I have also recently started listening to a podcast called Nerd Poker, which I think you guys have mentioned before, Having never played Dungeons & Dragons before, I was a little skeptical, but these guys are bloody funny, and I really enjoy this cast. Because of this, I decided to try and introduce D&D to my two eldest kids, and after a bit of web searching, came across a product called Hero Kids. This is a D&D-style game specifically designed for young children between 5 and 10. The rules have been modified to make it easy for children to understand and have fun with. The hero characters are great, and the stories are very enjoyable, but also made to work with kids' attention span. No special dice needed. It's been designed to work with six-sided dice, so just raid the kids' Yahtzee game and you're set. I bought the ultimate PDF bundle, which costs only $12, and contains a core rule set as well as five separate story adventures ready to play that increase in difficulty and complexity so that it improves the game as your kids gain experience. The adventure comes with storylines, pre-drawn maps, hero and monster cards, and all the instructions to DM, but also allows you to run riot yourself if you're an adventurous DM or if your kids really get into it. I had never played D&D, let alone DM'd one, and I found it really easy to do. The kids and I have played three of the five adventures so far, and they are having a blast with the different characters and situations. Their imagination is endless. My five-year-old daughter woke me up yesterday morning with a "Good morning, Daddy. Can we play Hero Kids?" My wife is a little worried about the violence, so we don't kill anything. We just have the monsters run away when they're beaten. I could not recommend this project enough for my geek dads trying to try D&D with their kids. Get off my back, mates. That is so great. Crunchy Crone from South Australia. Thank you so much. I think that's so sweet.
That is super sweet. I have several things to say. First, Eric, you do a really good Australian accent.
Well, I have been listening to your mom for, you know. That's not a your mom joke. His mom's actually Australian, and I've hung out with her multiple times.
I know. I mean, I've been listening to her for at least as long, I would say.
Yes.
But my Australian accent is bad. Two, well, I think it's awesome that you've been able to play Magic and have a 50-50 win ratio with 15 wins each. That's really cool, and that speaks to the balanced nature of the core sets versus, you know, when you get into like the spending a lot of money on booster packs.
Exactly.
And that kind of thing. And then also I really like this Hero Kids project. I'm definitely going to have to look into this because I know that I really want to play D&D with my daughter and her friends. And I was already thinking of a way that I could like scale down D&D to its bare basics and play it in a much more easy and fun for younger kids, you know, kind of format. So this is cool to know that there's this thing out there that I'll definitely have to check out. And it seems really cheap also, which is a bonus.
Yeah. And
that's cool. Like the idea, if someday my daughter woke me up and was like, "Can we play D&D or can we play Hero Kids?" That would just make my entire life. Because I'd be like, "Fuck yeah, that's exactly what I want to do." You gotta be kidding me. That's exactly what I want to do, Elsa. Let's do that.
It's just amazing. Like I got so heartwarmed from this email. First of all, that he started playing Magic with his son because he heard us talking about it, and that he's engaging his kids in nerddom. Because if nerds are cool now, imagine how cool nerds are going to be in 10 years, right?
I don't know. I thought it's a cyclical nature.
There's no cyclical nature in nerds. Nerds is an upward graph. And then eventually everyone will be a nerd and D&D will be taught in schools.
You've been working in the corporate world too long.
Recess will be indoors in 10 years. There will be no outdoor play. But that was really nice. Crunchy, thank you so much. Feel free to write in anytime.
Thank you, Crunchy. Good on you, mate.
Good on you, mate. Oi there.
That's cool as Waltz and Matilda and all that. Oi.
Jesse, you're not that bad. And then we also got a phone call this week. Spoiler, from Germany. But we're not going to do that right now because I'm in Palm Springs, I don't have any trivia with me, and we need to get on with the show, so that's going to be our break. Jesse, do you have a D20 handy?
That sounds good. I will real quick.
Okay.
Thanks, dndiceroller.com, which is not a real website.
Not really a real website. So we're each going to roll a 20-sided die. We're going to do our little tiny mat roll-off. Whoever rolls the highest gets to speak first on the cash. Jesse, are you ready?
Yes, sir. I rolled a 14.
I rolled an 18.
What?
I'm on a roll, buddy. Last week I rolled a 19. So
the week before that, you rolled a 1.
I am trending downward at this point, but try to beat a 17 next week, J-Dog. All right. So,
well, I'll work on it.
So my recommendation, my first, I'm just jumping to the end of the show. And that's the show. So my first topic this week is going to be about movies.
Do you know what nemesis means?
And it's also going to be about theme parks. Yesterday I went to Disneyland.
What?
For my honeymoon. It was super fun.
Awesome.
I rode the Matterhorn. I did Pirates of the
you
Caribbean.
You better have.
Did
you do the Indy?
I did Indy. Fast Pass cool. Indy, which is the only way to do it, because otherwise you're going to be in line for anywhere from... during the day... It ranged from 75 minutes to 110 minutes for Indiana Jones line.
Yikes. Did you do Haunted Mansion?
We did not do Haunted Mansion. We skipped on the Haunted Mansion, but we did do Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And,
oh, classic.
Yeah, and we did Space Mountain, and Lydia had never ridden Space Mountain before because it had always been closed was there. So Space Mountain's amazing. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad was closed, which was a little bit of a disappointment.
What? But. That sucks.
Yeah, close till fall.
Eric, you do the best impersonation.
Keep your hands and arms inside the thing. Inside the ride? Inside the car?
Well, you blew it.
Yeah, well, you set me up, really.
I'm sorry. Normally, you can pull that out of the bag. No worries.
There's no way that I could follow up that kind of intro. is it inside the cart?
Eric, you do the best small world.
Yeah. Chocolat for me, papa. It's just it's every language. That's my Esperanto. Anyway, so I went to Disneyland yesterday, and the thing that struck me the most was the propensity of Star Wars that is now just engulfed Disneyland. So first of all, you know, it's Disneyland itself is just a merchandising, like, it's a case study in merchandising gone right. You know, I mean, they're pulling down so much money in there. And you could buy everything from a Mickey Mouse swimsuit to a pin that has Minnie Mouse dressed up as Princess Leia on it. Like, you
I choose to believe that the Mickey Mouse swimsuit is for women, and it has Mickey Mouse's face, like, over the crotch area, right. And then each ear over each boob.
Yeah, it's got long ears.
Because that would be excellent.
That's the Oswald the Lucky Rabbit bathing suit, actually.
Lucky indeed.
But they have a bunch of these, you know, the Mickey Mouse ears hats. And, like, the one that I saw the most of there, and this was on from kids... that were like 4 years old to like adults, middle-aged men, was one that's R2-D2's head with two Mickey ears on it. It's like everywhere. And we talked about it right when it...
Dude, that's a collector's item.
Well, yeah, I guess technically. But there's quite a few of them out there.
Yeah, but I mean, that's cool because, I mean, Disney just picked up Star Wars.
Right, right. But they've always had Star Tours there.
That's true, but I feel like this is a special era.
Yeah. Well, this is the whole
thing. It's a symbolic gesture.
Yeah, and I talked about this when it came out. It was probably a year ago or so. When they revamped Star Tours. And for those of our listeners who don't know, Star Tours is basically a Star Wars-themed simulator ride where you got in a simulator. It used to be you got in a simulator... And you go through this story, and you'd fly through the Death Star, and it was all very fun. But this about a year ago, they decided they were going to revamp it, the ride. And instead of having one story that you went through, now there's like 40 different story combinations that you can fly through. And it's also Ooh. In 3D. And I have to say, they nailed it. It is awesome. It is like the greatest thing. The first time that I rode on it, I couldn't stop smiling like from ear to ear. It was so cool. Like, not only does the 3D get pulled off really great, but it used to be they had like this little droid that they invented who flew the ship. Now it's straight up C-3PO, so it's like a full-on animatronic C-3PO. And you know what an animatronic C-3PO looks like? C-3PO.
Like a real C-3PO?
Yes! It looks exactly like C-3PO, so it's awesome. You're in the room with them. And the first time that we rode it, we pop up, Darth Vader shows up right away, puts our ship in a force like lock, and it was so cool to be in that ship, and he's moving his hand around like back and forth, and you're basically being controlled by Darth Vader. Like your ship is being shaken back and forth by Darth Vader's hand, and it feels amazing. Like it feels real. Like did such a good job with the simulation. So then you break out of that. Then we went to Hoth. We're in the Hoth battle. You know, we flew under the AT-ST as it was dropping, as it was being wrapped up and tripped, and then we like fell down this glacier, which was awesome, and then we transported off to Naboo, and then we went down basically fell out of the sky into the water, went down to the Gun City, tried to pass through the planet's core, got caught in a sea monster's mouth, all in 3D. Then got spit out on the other side, landed in Naboo, and that was the ride. It was so cool. It was like...
See?
There are continuity errors, but...
Well, here here's the dangerous thing, though.
Uh-huh.
Is that... And I've seen people, and I can't articulate it as well as other people have, just commenting how... I guess you can't even blame George Lucas for it anymore, but how the original series is being co-opted is just another part of the greater, Star Wars universe,
yeah.
Whereas it should be 90%, and then you should look at the 10% of other stuff. And maybe that's how it is, because you just kind of end up on Naboo. But it's weird that they even, decide to... shove Naboo into it. Like, if I was there with my daughter, when she's a little bit older, when I got off that ride, I'd be like, remember that last part never happened.
Well,
that's made up.
I
don't remember that part.
I was talking about how much I enjoyed being in the force grip of Darth Vader, but my favorite part of the ride was when we got stuck in the sea monster's mouth. It was so cool. They had the simulation done so well. Like, you really felt like you were stuck in the mouth. He was, like, shaking his head back and forth. Plus, it's in 3D. He's right in your face. It was so well done. Like,
if only there were a moment in the original series where the main characters got eaten by a giant monster.
Yeah. Well, that.
Oh, wait. It's called them on the asteroid belt when that exact yes. same thing happened, that they could have done that instead.
And that might be the ride at some point. I only wrote it twice. The second time...
Well, I thought you got all 50 experiences.
Yeah, I got all 50. I just did that all day. Then the second time, you know, we were standing in line and we were like, where do you hope we go next? And I was like, well, you know, it'd be cool to go to Endor, do some racing through the trees. That would be cool. And then Lydia's like, well, I hope we get to go pod racing. And I was like, oh, yeah, that would actually be super cool to go pod racing. And guess
and
what?
And you're like, psych, you get to go podcasting instead.
Exactly.
Happy honeymoon.
Yeah. But guess what? We did get to go pod racing in the next one. It was so cool. Like, you know, the pod racing scene is probably the only good thing from episode one. But
yeah,
it was so awesome to go pod racing on Tatooine. And they have, like, Sebulba and his racer. And he, like, throws a wrench at you. And, like, it was so cool. And then we get shot into an asteroid belt where we're being hunted by Boba Fett in Slave One. He's, like, shooting sonic mines at us. And then we fly through the being constructed Death Star from Return of the Jedi. We fly through the core, like, at the end of that movie, and when Lando flies through the core in the Millennium Falcon. It was so cool. They nailed this ride so well. And it really made me think, because I was thinking back to a Slash Film article, which was posted about a week ago, where they were talking that they were polling people at Disneyland as to whether or not they would go to a Star Wars Land theme park.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yes. So,
Death Star Trench Run.
Exactly.
That's the ride I'm going on first.
Stay on target.
you worry about those fighters. I'll worry about the towers. I think I got that backwards.
Dude, that would
Stay on target.
Okay, so we have to... Before we get into this, Jesse, so there's a couple of things here. First of all, they could do...
Dibs on Parkins.
Okay, good. First of all, they could always just make, you know, convert like Tomorrowland into Star Wars Land. Or they could convert some part of California Adventure into Star Wars Land. They could do that. Or they could...
They should convert an entire part of California.
Yes.
In the Star Wars
Lucas
Land.
Ranch. They got that too in the deal,
didn't
they?
Oh my god, Eric, imagine if they did this.
Uh-huh.
And there was the Tatooine cantina that you could go and like buy drinks at.
Yes. Jesse, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. We're getting ahead of ourselves. We will talk about this. I'm as excited as you are. Would you rather have it be kind of a small part of Disneyland, like its own land? And like we literally rode every ride in Tomorrowland, so you know there's only like 5 rides in Tomorrowland, right? Or would you rather have it be its own theme park?
Definitely its own theme park.
Yeah,
I mean, and that theme park should be in Port Townsend, Washington, the perfect city for it.
The perfect. Now that's where the Twilight theme park's gonna be.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Damn.
So. All right, so then if this is going to be a Disneyland-style theme park, Jesse, so obviously we've already talked about we have to have a Tatooine, and we have to have Mos Eisley Cantina.
That should be most of the park, I think, is Tatooine. Because, as I mentioned before, Tatooine is the most fleshed-out planet in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah,
it has a lot of diversity of different subcultures. You have Jawa land, you got the Tusken Valley.
Right.
Where all the Italian food is.
Right.
You got Mos Eisley.
Mm-hmm.
You got the
Jabba's Palace.
Moisture evaporator farm. You got Jabba's Palace.
Sarlacc Pit.
Yeah, the Sarlacc Pit.
If you want to go to the
original. That's for adults only.
And then if you want to go to the original trilogy, you also have Espen? What was it? Mos something.
Mos Eisley?
No, there was Mos Eisley, and then there was another Mos. I want to say Mos Bespin, but that doesn't make any sense. Anyway, there was another Mos.
In the original movies?
No, in Episode 1. And then, and then you have the pod racing as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's unregulated. You bring whatever you want to race. There's no laws. Just bring what you want to race and race it. Pod racing.
Just bring it. So what are the other lands that we would need?
Mm. Well, obviously, you know, you got your Hoth, your Endor, possibly your Yavin 4, but I feel like you could maybe merge that into Endor because it's basically the same land.
Yeah.
Your Cloud City, you could have, like, gambling and stuff, because Cloud City, I feel like, was actually kind of like a destination place.
Yeah, it's a resort town.
It's definitely a resort town. I think there'd be gambling there, Sabacc playing, for sure. Oh, and then you have Death Star Land. Which is all buttoned down and formal, but, I mean, you could play try and shoot the Wookiee from 10 meters away. Harder than you think.
So, Jesse, this is the other part
you
of this.
Play
is like
to the trash chute.
Yeah, exactly.
The trash.
Well, see, this is the other part of this. Is like, if they really wanted to do this on the cheap, and if they wanted to make an entire park into Star Wars Land, then why don't they just convert Disneyland into Star Wars Land? And then you could just repurpose the rides, basically update the skins, right? So, of course, you could leave Star Tours. You know, Space Mountain could easily be turned into, you know, into a
Star
Wars
Run.
Theme. Basically, the
just
only thing
Akron.
The only thing they need to change is the line for that ride. They just need to like update the stuff that turns on the screens.
Right,
and it's a Star Wars line.
A Splash Mountain could be the aforementioned Jet Porkins.
Yeah,
you know, the X-wing pilot is too fat and crashes into the Death Star. That's Splash Mountain.
What was that guy's first name?
I think it's Jet.
Jet? It could be.
Or maybe J-E-K, Jek.
Oh, it could be Jek Mountain.
But his last name is best because it's Porkins.
Yes.
The one fat guy besides Jabba the Hutt. His name is Porkins.
Yeah, Porkins Mountain. Yeah, and then, I mean, the Matterhorn is obviously, that could be like your Hoth.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Sled.
That's your snow speeder.
Right.
You know, it actually makes circular motion, so just put a big AT-AT in the middle of it.
Exactly. Or you could, you know, replace the Yeti with the
the Wampa.
With the Wampa.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, there's Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. That could be your pod racing mm-hmm. roller coaster.
The teacups would mm-hmm. be, you know, when Darth Vader gets like hit by Han Solo and like spirals out of control.
Exactly.
Out of the Death Star trench.
Just turn them into TIE fighters.
Yeah, the TIE fighter.
And the whole time you're spinning, all you hear is. No. Actually, I think that Adventureland would have to be Ewok Town. Because they already have the treehouse.
Oh, is that the Robinson Crusoe one?
Well, now it's the Tarzan treehouse.
Yeah.
They repurposed it. So repurpose it again, D-Land.
Repurposing.
All right. Regardless, Disneyland is awesome. It was very fun. And yes, they need to do Star Wars Land.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse, what's your first topic this week?
Well, for my first topic, we can decide where we are in time. But uh-huh. normally we talk about our week. And there's just a couple things I actually wanted to talk about that happened to me this week.
All right, let's hear it.
So for the first thing, I gave myself a haircut.
You gave yourself a haircut?
Uh-huh. I bought clippers off Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut my own hair.
Shop
and
local.
It turned out pretty well.
Did you use a mirror?
Yes, I did use a mirror.
That might have been the dumbest question ever asked. Did Tasha help you, or did you do it by yourself?
She only helped me with like the final touches, but for the most part, I did it by myself. So I don't know. That was kind of fun. But the thing is, it came with these taper combs, guide things, so like you can taper your own hair like one swipe or whatever.
When I heard taper, I thought T-A-P-I-R, and they were like combs that you use on a taper, like the animal, the taper.
Well, it did come with that.
Tapers love to be brushed.
It came with the other thing.
Okay.
I only use it for a split second because it like kind of gouged my hair and looked awful, uh-huh. and it left like these three stripes, and now I look like Brian Bosworth.
Excellent, you got the Bosworth package.
Yeah, exactly. I got the Bosworth pack. And speaking of Seahawks football, the other thing that happened to me this week is I put on Madden 13 for the first time in a while.
Yep.
I probably haven't played this game in like 8 months, so it like downloaded all the new rosters and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it updates your players based on their performance in the season. So I got like the post-season Seahawks, and basically the Seahawks are unstoppable.
Well, Marshawn Lynch in that game was always unstoppable.
Dude, he's even more unstoppable now.
Yeah.
And like I just threw it on real quick and did like an exhibition match against the Rams, and Sam Bradford's first throw was a pick six. It was insane.
Was it Sherman or
it
Tom?
Was Sherman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I went like 37-3. It was crazy.
Just
so
you could finally win in Madden.
Yeah. Yeah. So Seahawks are doing good.
Dude, that's so funny that the Seahawks, that's another great thing about being a Hawks fan. Is that the Seahawks are so good that they made their crappy team better in Madden.
Yeah, exactly, because they were not good at the beginning.
No, they were awful. Of course. You used to have Sherman and Browner, two guys that weren't, I guess Browner went to the Pro Bowl the year before, but they weren't like totally like the greatest quarters in the league, and then a brand new rookie quarterback. And like, did they even start Russell Wilson at the beginning of that game, or was Matt Flynn already penciled in?
Yeah, it was Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest, and I'll jump to my first topic right now, and I want to talk about science.
If today we're able to create a two-headed dog with six legs, is it possible that a similar creature existed thousands of years ago? And I say yes.
Right, Scott.
Yeah.
So, last week we talked about animals, and that went over pretty gangbusters. We got some pretty good feedback about that. So, there's another cool animal science-related thing that I think you'll be interested in, Eric.
That's good. Literally, I think last week's topic about whales and cephalopods is my favorite topic we've ever done on this show.
Well, it, you know, great. I'm not trying to top it.
Okay.
But something cool is happening in the world of bees.
All right.
Which, and bees might be the most underrated animal on Earth.
Why?
Because they're helpful. They pollinate, like, everything, every fauna, flora, sorry. Every flora is pollinated by bees. For the most part, I don't know. Maybe that's a horrible generalization.
Overgeneralization.
But they definitely help with, you know, our friends known as plants. And they make sweet honey, the only non-perishable food on Earth.
Right. And without honey, we wouldn't have the term of endearment honey, which is their contribution to the pollination of humanity as well. Exactly.
Unfortunately, bees have been bastardized by their shitty cousins, wasps.
Oh, wasps are the worst.
Which do nothing but hurt you.
Exactly. They're the wolves of the air.
Yeah. And they suck. So, but what we're learning about bees is that they might be using electrical fields to communicate to each other.
Excellent.
And essentially, you know, they're flying around, and just by the laws of static electricity, they build up a lot of, static electricity. By, you know, energy just generated from hitting other molecules and such. But they're covered in a wax, appropriately. And so the energy doesn't, like, absorb into them. They just kind of are charged up with it on their outsides. And the only part of them that's receptive to it is, like, their something at the base of their antenna. So they can use this energy to, like, zap each other with antenna and communicate with it somehow.
That's crazy. So they're using, like, weird electrical fields?
Let me read this. And this comes from sciencemag.org, which I'm assuming is a legit site. With a name like sciencemag.org.
Of course.
What they found out is that the electrical charges can cause the antennas to bend. And what they're suggesting is that this bending, like, kind of correlates with some sensory cells that they're using for location.
Weird.
Yeah, so basically a guy, like a bee, flies around and charges up and then can use that electricity to bend another bee's antennas to direct them the way that they need to go.
What? I don't like that.
I like it a lot.
It freaks me out.
Well, like I said, bees are our bros. Bees are cool. Wasps and hornets, those are what suck.
So you don't think wasps and hornets do this as well?
I'm guessing not, because they don't do anything cool.
This is the craziest thing to me about bugs, because bugs don't give a shit about us as humans. Like, I'm sure that they don't have any real awareness that we're around. I mean, I guess mosquitoes have some awareness that we're, like, blood capsules. So that, you know, we're blood buffets. But I really think, like, if I were a bug, I would, like, have no idea that humans even exist. I would basically live in this weird world where I have all of these senses that we as humans can't even comprehend. Like, you know, there's this thing, there's this talk about, like, ants, you know, can, like, communicate to each other through antenna or whatever. Like, what are antenna? Like, nobody know. Like, how you can't even fathom what it's like to have antenna on your head, you know?
Yeah, I find it hard to believe, though, because, like, I think we've all been that, like, barefoot kid playing, you know, t-ball when a freaking, like, honeybee rolls up on you and is just, like, staring you down and looking at you and, like, they'll, like, kind of follow you around a little bit. I mean, that bee's aware of you and trying to figure out what you're about.
I think that there's something, I think that there's an awareness that you are something that they have picked up on. Like, there's some kind of maybe sweetness. Maybe you were eating a watermelon and it's on your face or something. And that's what they're smelling. But I don't think that they're like, oh, this is a human being.
Here's why I think you're wrong, Eric.
Okay.
Because it's, in the case of bees, they have one defense, which is their stinger.
All right.
But that stinger is a one-use item. It's barbed.
Right.
And if they sting you with it, they're going to die.
Yep.
Because, you know, they'll sting you with it, it's barbed, and they'll tear their guts out trying to fly away. Mm-hmm. I know, because I've had it happen. I've been on the receiving end of that.
Right.
Which to me suggests that they have to be able to comprehend what is and is not a threat. I mean, if every time they were, like, picking up on a scent, like, oh, that's something, I need to attack it and kill it, and it turns out it's a tree, then they're all going to die. Your entire colony is dead. They need to be able to be aware of and assess threats.
Yeah, and this is the interesting thing. Like, they're not even assessing the threat to themselves, because they're kamikaze pilots.
They are. They're assessing the threat to the queen.
To the hive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is interesting. I don't know, though. I mean, I think they have an awareness of animals in general, but, like, it's just interesting to me because, like, you know, a bug gets caught in your house and has no idea what's going on. It's just freaking out.
Well, what throws it for a loop is the window.
Yeah, the window.
Because it's like, I should be there because I just told myself to, like, move 6 inches forward, but it's not working.
It hurts.
I keep getting slammed on something. I'm freaked out. I don't like this.
The other crazy thing about being a bug is just, like, periodically, like, you just get stepped on. And that's the end.
Yeah, that does suck.
Like, the night, like, you're just crawling around. Tough. Like, can you imagine just, like, walking from point A to point B, and then all of a sudden it's just over? Like, you're like, I'm going to walk across the room. Nope. Done.
Yeah, that's called the risk you take anytime you drive on the highway.
Well, that's true, but I think it's a little higher for if you're inside someone's home. That's the other thing, is, like, there's such a murderous intent for humans against bugs. It's just like, all right, just kill it. Just end that life right
now.
That
sucks, but, like, bees are our helpers in this world, and I don't know. If I can just save the life of one honeybee, Eric, then I've done enough.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, bees are one of the only bugs that I don't try to kill.
Try and kill ladybugs?
No, I don't try to kill ladybugs.
You try and kill every praying mantis you see?
I do. I hate praying mantises. Freak me out. They are freaky, man.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm not a huge bug fan.
They're so cool.
Oh, God. And they have wings.
Bugs are fine. I'll let bugs crawl on me all day long.
God.
I don't care.
I cannot handle it. I could not handle it. Like, the fear factor, that's the thing that always throws me the most, is, like, when they're covered in bugs. Or they have to eat it. Like, eating the cave spider was, like, the worst thing I've ever seen on there.
Well, eating bugs is different than touching bugs.
Yeah, and like, you have to eat them alive. Anyway.
Yeah, that's weird.
Anyway.
I wouldn't even want to eat ladybugs.
I mean, but, like, a bee, it's always, like, we'll trap it and then get it outside. That's, like, your thing with a bee. But basically any other bug, I'm just like, you're dead. You went in the wrong house, bud.
Bug. Yeah. Anyway. So anyway, maybe these bees are able to communicate with electricity, which I think would be cool.
That That would be pretty sweet.
They're communicating somehow because they build these magnificent hives in using teamwork. It's not like one random bee goes out and builds a beehive.
Yeah,
it's a collaborative effort, and it somehow it comes together better than anything humans can do. Basically, if you tell two humans to work together on the same task, it's going to get fucked up somehow.
It really is.
Yet, like, 10,000 bees are able to build these giant beehives. Right. And they're, like, they're perfect, you know?
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of symmetrical cells.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they all fit together perfectly.
Yeah.
But then if you tell, like, an electrician and a plumber to work together. It's like, I thought I could just go through that load-bearing 2x4 with this lead pipe. And then the electrician's like, why are you even using lead? That's how that goes.
That is how that goes. Yeah, I don't know. You know, the other part about this, Jesse, is we also use electrical fields to communicate. In fact, we're doing that right now. You're in Port Townsend. I'm in Palm Springs, and for some reason you and I can talk to each other really with no problem at all.
Well, I'm not trying to say that bees are more advanced than humans.
Well, Jesse, this is obviously your argument, and your argument is moot.
Oh, dang. Yeah. Well, we should move on then.
All right, let's move on to our voicemail this week from our very own Dennis Kleinbeck, German correspondent, D. Klein. That's a cool name. That should be your rapper name, dude.
Declined. Yeah, totally.
You just got declined.
Your career's on the decline.
Well, it's not even, it hasn't even inclined yet.
Well, not Dennis's.
Oh, okay.
That's what he says to other
rappers. Oh, that's his trash talk.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so this is Dennis's voicemail from this week.
Hey, Riggins, just popped open a beer and thought this is the perfect time to send you a voicemail. So, yeah, since you talked about him in your last cast, what is your favorite story by H.P. Lovecraft? I have to go with Shadow of Innsmouth because I think it's his most intense story. But I also like his short story, the music by of Erich Zahn. It's very nice. Nice accent by a work by Eric two or three casts ago. I really laughed my ass off. So have a nice week. Have a great cast and stay arrogant. Get off my back.
Get off my back, Dennis.
Get off my back.
Get off my back. Sorry, I was playing that on iTunes. Anyway, so Jesse, so you're the expert here. I'm a little bit of a poser when it comes to H.P. Lovecraft. I love Lovecraftian things. I love Arkham Horror. I love the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I've read Call of Cthulhu, the story, but I am not the, Lovecraftian, scholar that you are because you poured through those books. So what's your favorite, Lovecraft, story, J-Dog?
I really like The Rats in the The Rats in the Wall, which is about a guy who's, like, staying in this creepy house, and there's rats in the wall that kind of take it over. And there's another one, I forget the name of it, but it's about these two grave robbers, but they don't rob graves for the loot. They do it for kind of the poetic nature of it all, so they'll only rob a grave when, you know, the perfect full moon is out, and if it's the perfect grave of, like, this interesting person, and they're looking for, like, a specific thing, and, the people are not so much about just getting money, they're about getting, like, this kind of, I don't know, poetic scene set up. So that's a real interesting one, and then one of their grave robbings comes back literally to haunt them. But I do actually have to agree with Dennis. Shadow over Innsmouth is probably my favorite one. It involves the Innsmouth look and like these fish monsters, and it is really intense, and it's the only time in my life that I've ever had a nightmare where I literally shot up in bed like gasping was because the night before I read that book, and then I had this super graphic nightmare about me being in like this underwater world with like octopi attacking me. And then one was like shooting right at my face, like to suffocate me. And at that moment, like I shot up in bed. It was like,
jeez.
And so, like I had a total reaction to that. So I actually have to agree with Dennis that Shadow Over His Mouth is probably my favorite Lovecraft story.
Excellent. Well, was the grave robbing one, is that called The Hound?
I wouldn't know. I read so much Lovecraft stuff at the same time that I can't really remember. Yeah. It all kind of blends together. All
right. Well, cool, man. So, Dennis, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you calling in, so I didn't have to do my German accent this week. But we're very happy that you enjoyed it, because you are the ultimate judge for that. And, Jesse, it's now time to move on. My second topic this week is going to be, we have a special guest on the show. So let's go ahead and bring him in. Here is our guest.
Guest.
This year, Jesse, we talked about this on the podcast last week. We weren't able to make it out to the East Coast to be a part of PAX East. But luckily, right. One of our extraordinarily awesome listeners made it out there, asked us for some advice. We gave him some advice, and now we want to see how it all shook out. So I would like to welcome to the podcast, for the first time as a guest, John O'Brien. John, how are you doing?
Good. How you guys doing?
Great.
Doing well.
So, John, this was your first PAX East, correct?
Yes, first PAX experience at all.
First PAX experience ever. And did you follow any of our advice that we gave you from last episode?
I tried. I didn't plan too much just because I was only going for the one day, and I wasn't sure how full all the panels would be.
Yeah, that's always so, hit and miss.
Were I made it to one panel.
Were there huge lines for all the panels?
Yeah, I mean, I got there and I went immediately to the BioShock panel. So that was at noon. I ended up getting there, hung out for a little bit, and then got in line for that.
Cool, awesome. All right, so before we get into that, John, you know, we did this a couple weeks ago for South by Southwest. We're going to do a little PAX East, a little Personal Arrogance Exhibition Experience Awards for PAX East 2013. So. Right now we're going to start with the category, fan favorite category, weirdest thing. John, what was the weirdest thing from PAX 2013?
I'm going to have to say, I mean, there's a lot of the cosplaying going on. There was a surprising number of cross-gender cosplaying, which Ooh. Threw me off a little bit, a lot of League of Legends stuff. But I would say the weirdest was... Yeah, lots of League of Legends stuff. But the weirdest was the, I don't know the guy's name, from Street Fighter, the boxer. There was one guy walking around in full boxing gear, just underwear. That's it.
Were they tight?
With boxing gloves, helmet, and all that. That was probably the weirdest thing. And he would walk up to people and just start, he would just start boxing with people, like out of nowhere.
Oh, was he punching people
in the
face? Did
he go to jail?
not actually, no. God, no, not actually punching people. But no, he would. I think he thought he was in the game, to be completely honest.
Were they tidy whiteys?
No, they were like. I mean, yeah, but they were red.
They were red. Was there any mammal tone?
Yeah. No. Oh,
okay.
God, no.
Good.
Wow, you would think he would wear boxers, right?
You would have thought so, but you know, it was very revealing costume.
Yeah, he went for it. So
he did, and it was appreciated. A lot of people were, I think a lot of people got kind of into it, which was bizarre to say the least.
That rule. So I guess that goes right into the next category, John, which is going to be best cosplay. So what was the best cosplay of PAX 2013?
I saw two that stick out. You guys familiar with Mass Effect, right?
Of course.
Right.
So there was somebody dressed up as Samaras. From Mass Effect, the blue chick.
Great.
With, like, she dyed her all of her skin blue. Like, and she had the squid things on the head. It was a pretty legit costume complete with a prop gun and all that. I would say that if that was up there along with a female Ezio from the upcoming Assassin's Creed 4, I want to say.
The pirate one?
Black Flag? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for pure effects, I would definitely say the Samara was top notch. It looked like it was professional. But, I think we'd have to give it to Samara.
All right. Well, so she actually dyed her skin?
Yeah, it looks like she used body paint or something on, like, her whole chest and neck area.
Right.
And even, like, her entire face. And then it got, like, the darker blue at the top where the lines are, and even had all, like, the red, I don't know what to call them, on her face. But she went full out, like, professional makeup.
That's great. And she really doesn't have to worry about it smudging because of the hover arm problem. Right?
Yes.
Nobody's going to be touching her ever.
No, there's a lot of hover hand going on. So.
Good, good. We like it that way. All right, John, what was the best swag of PAX East 2013?
So, I guess, all right. So I got a bunch of stuff. I just actually went through it to try to sort it out. There was a lot of T-shirts.
Good. So you went full swag fest for this, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They basically throw the stuff at you when you walk past
the
booth.
How many shirts?
Four.
Oh, pretty
okay.
good.
So
pretty good.
New Egg shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it says, go ahead, review me on the front. And on the back, it says, take it from a geek with the little logo. I spent some time at the video booth to take a look at their, it's called the Shield, the new handheld system they're coming out with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
No.
Oh, all right. Well, that was one of the best in the show that I was going to talk about a little bit. But
I got
a shirt from
don't
them.
Don't spoil it. You have to
no
say
spoilers.
Spoilers, John, if you're going to spoil the show.
I got a Watch Dogs T-shirt for that game.
Oh, cool.
Which was pretty cool. But I think the best swag was from the Think Geek booth.
Mm-hmm.
They had a Portal 2 plush toy of the little guy with the four legs.
Oh, cool.
That they gave out. Wow. Yeah, it's battery powered. I haven't got batteries in
what?
It yet, but yeah, I think it talks or something.
Mm.
Wow.
It will shoot you with a laser.
Yeah. And then there was like Cards Against Humanity booster packs, stuff like that. But
yeah.
One of the other cool things I saw was The Last of Us, the game that came out. They had foam bricks. I didn't get one of those, but they were passing out foam bricks with little smiley
That's
faces
hilarious.
On it.
That's pretty cool. Were people
so
throwing them at each other?
No, these were solid bricks. They were, I mean, not actual brick, but they probably would have hurt. They had some heft to them.
Huh.
Well, that's exciting. But,
The portal thing was pretty cool.
Oh, cool. I want to get right into Best in Show, John, since you already jumped the gun and you're already teasing it. What was the Best in Show of PAX East 2013?
Well, I got some playtime on the NVIDIA Shield,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's like a handheld that they've got for, I think it plays Steam games as well as stuff from their own marketplace,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, that was a blast. The line for that was pretty long. We played some Borderlands on it.
Oh, cool.
And they also had Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. I didn't get a chance on that. But the screen looks fantastic. It was, and you can, I guess, stream it to HDTV and
what?
Just use that as like a controller, which
what?
Was very cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like a probably a five to 7-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 720p, so it was HD. It looked fantastic.
So, have you seen the Wii U controller?
Yes.
How would you compare it in size to that?
Well, it's a little different. It's honestly, it's like an Xbox controller with a screen on top.
Oh, okay.
Is what the Shield looks like.
Cool.
So, I mean, it's got the two little, the two joysticks and then a regular D-pad and then the four regular buttons as well. Mm-hmm. And then it's got some additional stuff and speakers built in. So you can either use it by itself or stream it to a TV, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that's super cool. What was the whole motivation behind them trying to get into the console game? Because you think NVIDIA, you think video cards.
I have no idea. They were rushing people through, so yeah. You didn't really get too much of a chance to talk to them. But they're saying that they're aiming to release it by the end of quarter two, so next couple months.
Cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, so I'd never heard of it and just sort of happened to walk past into a relatively short line. It was about 40 minutes to play.
That's interesting because it's weird how, like, right now we might be in a new little console revolution. I think maybe Steam has Steam has kind of inspired this, but we talked about the Ouya on here a couple weeks ago, which is an Android-based streaming game system, and then, NVIDIA coming out with a handheld console. It's really interesting how, other companies are trying to get in the game now.
Yeah, and I like that it goes with Steam, which is fantastic because it'll give you that chance. And I think it ran on some sort of Android operating system based on what I saw. But
cool.
I haven't found too much information on it, but keep an eye out.
That's awesome. So, John, we're gonna wrap up the PAXes with everyone's favorite award. What was the worst in show of PAX 2013?
Well, in regards to the games, I would say there was no BioShock Infinite playable demo.
What?
Yeah.
How is that even
I could not
possible?
Find one. I went to the panel.
PAX East is 3 days before the game comes out and they don't have a playable demo?
I went to the panel. I found the booth. As far as I saw, there was no playable demo of the game.
Wow. And they didn't have a playable demo at PAX Prime last year either. So nobody's gotten their hands on this game.
They answered a lot of questions about it in the panel, but as far as that, no, there was there was nothing.
Interesting. Well, that is that's a big letdown.
Yeah, and I mean outside of that, the lines, like you guys said, I'm happy I didn't plan too much because I waited for the BioShock panel probably 2-3 hours.
Wow.
And I mean that was with you could see kids getting kicked out with fake tickets too. So
really.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot. Like, people were getting stuck. When I was walking in the door, there was a lot of fake passes.
Really?
Yes, that's really
were they, like, obviously fake?
Well, some of... For the passes this year, I guess it had, a little holographic part on it.
Uh-huh.
That was a little different. So they went a little more secure with the passes, but they were still pretty easily fakeable. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they would take kids at the door and... try to shine like a flashlight through it or something along those lines, and the ones that got thrown out that I saw were very fake.
Oh, super
fake. I've never seen that before.
But some of the enforcers were talking. I was in line, obviously, had a chance to talk to them, and they said, yeah, there's a lot of fake. They've actually planned on 1,000, even more than 1,000 fake passes every year, and that's why they sell less and less.
Wow, that's so... Well, that doesn't seem to be... That wouldn't help the problem. You'd think they'd sell more so that there are more real passes and they're making more real money.
Well, I think what happened was the fire department has a pretty tight hold on them. So if they end up selling more passes and then they don't anticipate the fakes, they'll get shut down.
Well, that's super weird.
Wow.
So, John, you were only there for 1 day. How many hours were you there?
I got there at 7 and left at 1 a.m.
One morning. Cool. Did you do, were you able to do any board gaming or any PC free play or anything that wasn't just like a whirlwind? I know it's really tough in 1 day.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to get into the Diablo on PS3. Uh-huh. And then besides that, I played a little bit of Magic on garbage cans because there weren't enough tables, which was fun. I played one game of Settlers and just basically spent a lot of time just hanging out playing. There's some Cards Against Humanity going on because they gave out a lot of free packs for that. But I left. I got some dinner, hung out with a couple of people. It wasn't too hectic.
So was it a little overwhelming? I mean, Jesse and I haven't been to our first PAX in like over 10 years now. Or I guess about a decade since we went to our first PAX. So... I don't necessarily even remember my first PAX. I didn't know what to expect. And then I've, you know, we both kind of seen it grow over the years. But what was it like going in there? Was it a little bit of sensory overload?
A little bit. I mean, it was wall-to-wall people when I got out of the BioShock panel. So I got there really early, so there wasn't that many people around. So when I got out of the panel, it was like you walked out into the bright sun and you're just like, oh, my God. And, yeah, I mean, I'd heard about it from you guys. I'd read up about it just sort of to see what was going on. So I didn't plan on being able to move around too easily, but
yeah.
There was certainly a lot more stuff there than I anticipated. And I had, this is actually the first time I'd ever been to the convention center even. So
yeah. Well, you can also always just crowd surf if it gets too dense.
Yeah, it was almost at that point. I mean, some of the lines were very condensed down. They had like not the turnstile, but the ropes to keep people separated from the walkways and all that. But
yeah,
there was enough people that the enforcers were going around pushing people to stay in lines.
Jeez. Well,
yeah, they enjoy doing that. Eric, I think you stumbled upon the perfect cosplay for you and me next year.
What is it?
You'll be the Silver Surfer.
Uh-huh.
I'll be your surfboard. I crowd surf and you stand on my stomach.
Jesse, I think you should be the surfboard. I might crush you.
Well, you would be a longboard. I don't know if that fits in the canon.
Silver Surfer has a longboard, doesn't he? It's kind of a longboard.
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, John, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast this year and tonight. And we really appreciate it because we wanted to go to PAX East, but it just didn't work out this time. So, you know, we always appreciate the feedback that you give us on everything we do. And we really appreciate you coming on the cast tonight. It's good to hear your voice, buddy.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, guys. Hopefully you'll make it out here next year.
Hopefully. Thank you, John. Thank you, PAX East. My favorite thing about PAX East being over is that PAX tickets will go on sale soon. So,
oh, God.
I know.
I'm so bummed out.
Why?
Because this is the first PAX I've missed in 9 years.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous, dude.
This is like my Grateful Dead that I follow around the country, you know?
Well, you know, Jesse, you have a baby and it just screws everything up.
Yeah, word to the wise on that one, guys.
Now you can't go to PAX. You just have to enjoy your beautiful daughter for the rest of her life.
Yeah, now my amazing daughter, who I get to enjoy every day, is all that I get to appreciate.
Great job. Anyway, sarcastic humor for those who can't tell what sarcasm is. Jesse, what's your second topic this week?
Well, there's an interesting trend that's coming out of the Detroit Free Press.
Uh-huh.
That I've learned that craft beer has officially replaced wine as the drink young women prefer.
Interesting.
So
that's really interesting.
Yeah, for years, beer has been the average person in America's drink of choice, but only recently has it become the drink of choice for young women.
Yeah.
According to a 2012 Gallup poll.
Wow.
So that's really exciting, and last summer. There was basically like a group of young people checking out the brewery where I work at, and one of the brewers asked, like, I don't even remember if that's exactly the context, but one of the brewers asked, like, a younger lady, like, what was her favorite drink, and she said an IPA, and she was just like some, like, pretty well-off a young woman from New York, and you wouldn't exactly expect that to be an IPA, but
right.
the craft beer market has saturated, or, you know.
Yeah, it's gotten...
Maybe saturated is not the right word, but, you know, it's become so popular that people who might not have previously been, you know, pinpointed as craft beer drinkers are becoming known as craft beer drinkers. That's awesome, especially young people and especially women. And that's great to hear.
It is good to hear. There's a couple things that I think that beer has a lot going for it that that has been kind of hidden. Like, I think there's the reason why a lot of people drink beer, in my opinion, is, I mean, not only I love the taste of beer, but the fact is, like, if you want to get drunk off of beer, you kind of got to work at it. Like, unless
yeah.
you're drinking, like, really high alcohol beers. Like,
yeah.
you got to really put in the work to get drunk on just your standard beers, you know?
Yeah. When I think of beer, I don't really think of something that people drink to get drunk.
Right. Whereas wine,
I get
wine
full.
Is kind of in that
yeah.
category, you know?
Wine will knock you on your ass.
Yeah.
You know, at 12%, you know, right. it's easy to get a 10%. Beer, obviously,
yeah.
you know, even a 12% beer, that's, you know, kind of standard imperial territory, which is the same as wine. So it's not like it's hard to find beer that is as strong as wine, but
right. But if you're looking to spend $8 at the supermarket for a 6-pack, you're not going to be getting anything that's over like 6.5%.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, a manageable thing, and you'd have to like pound through that and
right.
you're going to get full, you're going to have to go pee.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the practical way to get buzzed.
Exactly. So I think that's, I honestly think that's a good thing. Like, you know.
I agree.
The whole, you know, if you're going to drink cocktails or if you're going to drink wine, I just think you're going to get drunk way faster than if you're drinking beer. The second part that makes this great is obviously more people drinking craft beer is a good thing. You know, right now we're in a craft beer boom, and there's craft breweries just popping up left and right. But I think that the demand is there, that there's still the market isn't saturated by these guys yet. What do you think? Because you work at a craft brewery, so.
What do I think about market saturation?
Market saturation, yeah.
We're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely where I work, like on the Olympic Peninsula, not even close to market saturation. In places like Seattle,
uh-huh.
maybe getting there. I mean, there's like 11 breweries in Ballard
yeah.
alone.
Yeah, there's like 3 that opened up in like the last 3 months.
Yeah. But, you know, that being said, more and more people are getting more and more interested in going – literally, like, going to the brewery to buy their beer to
uh-huh.
get it as fresh as possible and being able to communicate with the people who make it. And as that market keeps growing, like we've mentioned before, 6% of the beer market is craft
right.
in the U.S. right now, which is a pretty low number.
Yeah.
So as long as that number, if that goes up to 7%, like, that's a huge leap.
Right.
That's a 12%? 14% leap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, 12% or 14% more room for extra breweries.
Yeah.
So I don't think market saturation is that big of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, say it blew up, say, you know, craft brewing jumped to 12% of the overall beer sold in the U.S. That would be, you'd still need twice as many breweries as you have now.
If it jumped up to 12%, and mm-hmm. you know, assuming that beer consumption in total remained the same,
yeah,
and the demand for craft beer, if it went up to 8%, I don't think there would be enough beer to supply that.
Yeah, this is really.
I think we would run out of craft beer.
So the other thing that I've noticed, you know, living in Seattle, I think you're a little spoiled. Here at the hotel I'm staying at in Palm Springs, they actually have a really good craft beer selection. California has, you know, a solid craft beer heritage as well.
Right.
But like, you know, when we went out east to Boston, I was expecting, you know, this is the land of Sam Adams. There's got to be a lot of craft beers here. And you were hard pressed to find craft beers on tap in the Northeast.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah. It's just dominated by Possum Beer Company and Harpoon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's definitely growing there. And I think we were just in the wrong places, too.
Yeah, that's true. The Cheers bar is probably not the place to find
beer. Yeah, I feel like if someone came from New England to the type of places that we were, you know, the touristy places that we were at in Seattle, they would also be greeted with some crappy selection.
They would, but I don't know. I mean, anywhere you go in Seattle, you're going to have Pyramid on tap, or you're going to have Alaskan on tap, or you're going to have, like, these aren't like super niche-y breweries, but you're still going to have some craft beers on tap no matter where you go in Seattle.
Pyramid and Alaskan are our versions of Sam Adams and Harpoon.
Yeah,
and
I guess.
Wicked Cap or whatever it's called. Strange Hat? What is it? Twisted Hat?
I don't know. I like Wicked Cap.
Magic Hat. It's Magic Hat.
Yeah, same diff. So the other thing that I've noticed is that, do you think that, so, I mean, Portland has become a very interesting city since Portlandia got released. Though everybody kind of knew Portland was kind of Hipsterville before that. But Portlandia put it on a national stage. And, like, now even, like, this season, I was just watching cable for the first time in a very long time here in the hotel room. This season of The Real World takes place in Portland, Oregon. Which is crazy. Yeah.
So, what's that like?
I don't know. I think it just premiered, but I was watching the commercials for it. But I think the Portlandization of the nation kind of has something to do with it, because, I mean, obviously amongst nerds, beer has become a very popular drink. Like, I look at my friends who are nerds from across the country, and everybody loves beer. I think playing into it, like, you could sit down and play a game and you could drink beer the entire time you're playing and not get schnockered, which is good. You can also, you know, there's a lot of different varieties. It's a good nerdy drink. It's a good thing to get into. Like, if you're a geeky guy, you can get into beer. It could be one of your geek slices, no prob.
Yeah, there's a lot of options.
Right, but then there's also the hipster
geeks view. Like options.
Exactly. But then there's also the hipster view of it now. I think the hipsters also really love beer.
Hipsters love beer, but they don't love beer in a way that's quite as beneficial to
craft breweries.
Breweries.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to hipsters, there's a term in the beer industry and the beer culture called tickers.
Uh-huh.
And these are people who are trying to rack up their number of beers tried.
Right.
So they're just ticking off beers. So, like, they'll drink a beer just because they haven't tried it yet.
Uh-huh.
And then once they've tried it, you know, they're done with it and they just want to move on to the next one. So, like, there's no brand loyalty there. They're just moving on for the more and more niche and more harder to find, more exclusive brands. And, like, this is these are topics that have been covered in, like, big beer articles, periodicals rather.
Yep.
Is this idea, and this is stuff coming out of Portland, like getting more, like people getting more and more niche and just trying to find the most new and radical brews. And the fact of the matter is like, if you want to survive as a brewery, you need established customers that want to have your drink over and over again, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're trying to sell beer, you don't want to sell beer to people who are just going to have it once, never drink it again. And there's this trend that's developing, and I think it is kind of a hipstery thing that, like, I've had this beer and this beer and this beer. I've tried all these beers and I've tried all these beers you've never heard of.
Yeah.
You know, and I tried these beers before it was cool.
Right.
And that does not help the industry at all, because that's not really a customer.
But you need those people reaching out their tentacles into the smaller breweries in order for those breweries to get that street cred. So
but they try that brewery and then move on.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, but I'm just looking at this. I'm looking at nerds. I'm looking at hipsters. And if you look at that, like, that's a pretty big chunk of your demographic of young people. And those are also your influencers of young people. you know, when you look at who's using social media and who's taking advantage and broadcasting what they want to say out to people, it's basically nerds and hipsters. So if nerds and hipsters are drinking beer, then young people are going to be drinking beer. It's really, really interesting. I know when I was like in high school, like a lot of people were drinking wine because of Sex and the City, which is a little weird.
Yeah, beer is doing really well right now. Craft beer is doing really well, and it's really up to the brewers to maintain the interest of the population, you know, to keep doing good stuff.
Well, keep doing good stuff. That's what I want. But I'll also drink Tecate on a hot day. All right, Jesse, let's go ahead and move on. Before we do recos,
never disparage a good Rainier or Tecate or Corona on a hot day.
Oh yeah,
it's just perfect. It's just perfect.
Put a lime in it. Before we get on to our recos, call it a cast. We're gonna do our Facebook roundup. Every week we post on Facebook, and we ask you what you want us to talk about this week. Dennis Kleinbeck wants us to talk about Bioshock Infinite. Unfortunately, I've been on my honeymoon, but this is a game that I really want to pick up. Everybody's talking about it. You know, John O'Brien said he didn't get to play it at PAX East, which I think is really weird that they didn't have playable stuff at
PAX
East.
That is bizarre.
Why would you? It's literally like
that almost makes me seem skeptical.
But Polygon said that it was an amazing game, and all the reviews coming out are saying it's really, really an amazing game. So I want to play it.
I really trust Polygon, so.
Yeah, and I also just love Ken Levine. I love Bioshock is one of my
You love Ken Levine games. Cuisine.
Love Ken Levine Cuisine. That's all cuisine. You eat. You have to use the giant steampunk oven to cook it, but it is worth it. So we'll let you know. How about some Game of Thrones to talk? That's Sean Criswell. How about some Games of Thrones to talk? I can't.
Hey, I'm a Mario.
If I could to speak. How about that? Why don't you go listen to The Night's Watch? Because guess what, guys?
We have a whole podcast dedicated to
it. We have a whole podcast dedicated on the Bald Move Network. God, The Night's Watch is coming up. Game of Thrones premieres on Sunday. Everybody's stoked about it, so please be sure that you are subscribed to The Night's Watch. They are much more qualified than we are to talk of such things. Ben Hall wants us to talk about Disney Infinity, and Michael Coffey sent us a link about it. This is so cool. This is something I want to bring up on a future cast, so I'm going to go ahead and table this discussion because I think it's something that we could definitely dedicate a whole segment to. Beth Ann says, so it seems superheroes are the topic of choice lately. Well, I, for one, would like to know what supervillain each of you would be using a personal trait to correlate with and why. So Lydia brought this up. You know, I'm a big fan of the octopus, of the great Pacific octopus. You can hear more about that. Yes?
I like where you're going with this, mm-hmm. but I think it would make much more compelling podcast if you chose my characteristic and I chose your characteristic.
All right. Well, in that case, you know, when I think of you, Jesse, I think of a ginger. I think of an Australian. And that's basically all I think about. So those two things, it has to be Captain Boomerang from The Flash. And also an original member of the Suicide Squad.
That just...
Captain Boomerang.
It screams sunburn.
Yeah, it totally is, man.
But ginger's in Australia.
Yes. And Captain Boomerang is a ginger from Australia. He throws boomerangs at the Flash. He's also an original member of the Suicide Squad. And he's probably top three of my favorite DC villains. So you're top three of my favorite podcast hosts that I host with. So massive
insult.
Well, I mean, John O'Brien really did a good job this week.
Yeah, it's true.
So
damn it, John.
So Jesse, you're definitely Captain Boomerang. Who am I?
Okay. Well, I think of you. You're a very charismatic guy.
Oh, thank you.
You're good at your accents. Mm-hmm. You're a very personable guy. I think. If you harness that charisma in an evil way, I think you're Red Skull.
Oh, God. That is rough. And then who would be our nemesis? Jesse, I think it's pretty obvious that your nemesis would be...
anyone who's English.
Yeah, I was thinking Silver Surfer because he's basically intergalactic and... Oh, pfft,
whatever, I want to be Silver Surfer for PAX.
Well, the problem is he's flying through space. He is completely reflective, which means that he'll intensify the sun's rays on your body and then you'll be burned to a crisp because of your gingerdom.
I do not like that.
Yeah. Who would my nemesis be?
I don't know. Churchill?
How about Captain America?
Nope.
Okay. God. All right. And then James Patterson said, enjoyed the squid versus whale discussion. Would totally listen to Eric and Jesse talk about crap about the Animal Kingdom cast. Eric, did you do fantasy baseball this year yet? I got my auto draft coming up on Saturday. I'm very excited about it. Jesse's sister is actually, she's a loyal listener, and she also...
What? She chimed in?
No, but your sister is like the wildlife person.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we could get her involved somehow in an animal cast.
Yeah.
And then finally, John O'Brien let us know that Activision, I watched a video of this weird video that they released. It was part of the Game Developers Conference where they showed super high-res graphics that were like basically photorealistic. The creepy Uncanny Valley is uncanny. It is weird, and I don't like it. Let's stylize
Dude,
things, people.
I looked at that, too, and I kind of thought about the Uncanny Valley, but I wasn't actually that turned off by it.
Yeah,
I
could
totally embrace that. Yeah. I wasn't weirded out at all.
I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
I don't think it's far enough down the valley for me to really wig out yet.
All right.
I don't think it... I only think, like, when I literally cannot tell the difference between a human and a robot or a computer-generated image that I would really get the Uncanny Valley syndrome.
It's pretty close, though.
I don't know. With that old dude, you can tell. You can tell with the old dude.
The
lady was pretty on the nose. Yeah. But still, I wasn't, like, freaked out.
Well, that's good, Jesse. You're primed for the future. And then I just want to give an update on the Personal Arrogance Bracket Challenge set up by Roger Dotsy. Last week I was in first place. Now I am in eighth place out of nine. The only person that I am ahead of is Roger Dotsy.
Oh, it's Roger Dotsy. What happened?
I don't know. Three of my four final four guys got knocked out pretty early. I had Wisconsin, VCU, and Butler. They're all gone. Louisville's still in there. They are my champion. I believe they're Rogers' champion as well. I think I'm on the fast road to decline here because, well, Roger also has three of his final four out. Wow, that's a lot of red on your bracket there, Roger.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
But everybody is also very excited about fantasy football, so we'll be talking more about that in the future. Just want to give a shout-out to Bald Move Network. Of course, The Watching Dead is out. Of course, the Bald Move TV podcast is out. And, of course, The Because Show is out. Up Yours Downstairs is out. And, as we mentioned before, The Night's Watch will be coming up very soon with Game of Thrones premiering on Sunday. Please go to baldmove.com, check out everything. You can get in touch with us. Send us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com. Go on our Facebook page. We got our Facebook page for Personal Arrogance. We got our Facebook page for Bald Move, or you can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 360-362-0024. Do want to give a shout out to Sean Criswell, and it looks like a husband and wife team, Amy Bonjean, Jacina, and Mike Jacina, probably Hussina, I don't know, I can't read correctly, but thank you so much for liking us on Facebook. Jesse, let's do some recommendations to call it a cast. What do you say?
Yes.
Cool. What's your first reco?
I can't actually remember if I recommended this or not. I feel like I maybe have, in which case it's a double reco. Russia's Toughest Prisons.
Uh-huh.
On Netflix.
I don't think you've recommended this.
It's a sweet documentary about prisons in Russia.
All right. And then I'm going to recommend, I think I recommended this, then I de-recommended it. Now I'm re-recommending it. And that's the Roku box, because the Roku box is super portable, and you could take it with you on vacation. We brought it here, and basically you have an on-demand / pay-per-view right in our hotel room that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg.
Nice!
It's great. Yeah, it works perfectly. So take your Roku on vacation.
Definitely do that.
Do that. What's your second?
My seco reco is just make your own spaghetti sauce, guys.
Just do it.
It's not that hard. I made my spaghetti sauce.
You really sounded like Steve Brule there.
Hey, Dumbo.
Just make
if you don't have a
date
for the prom, just take your own girlfriend. Just take your sister. So I threw in some meat, cooked the meat, you know, ground beef.
Yep.
And then, you know, with some onion. And then basically if you throw in some garlic, cook the garlic, and then put in a, like, just dice up some tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to be real, you know, fine with the cutting up the tomatoes. Throw that in the pan. It all, like, kind of melts together and makes an awesome spaghetti sauce. Don't be a slave to ragu.
You sound like Steve Brule so much right now.
Hey, dingus, make your own spaghetti sauce for your health.
For your health. And then my Seco Reco this week is going to be the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. This is where we're staying. It's super cool, man. It's got a great pool. It's got a great bar. We did karaoke on Tuesday night. But it's a very hip place to stay. So Ace Hotel, if you're going to be in Palm Springs, stay there. There are Ace Hotels around the country. If you want to impress your friends, stay at the Ace. I really should have got them to sponsor this cast or something, but anyway.
Yeah, you probably could have gotten, like, free towels or something.
Free towels, daily, Ace Hotel.
daily delivered to your bathroom.
Yep. All right, so that's our cast for this week. I want to thank John O'Brien for coming on. I want to thank Dennis Kleinbeck.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank Crunchy. Just want to thank all of our listeners. You guys all rule. Please stay in touch with us, because our show only gets better when you're a part of it. Jesse, thank you for being on the cast. Lydia, thank you for letting me be on the cast. And we'd like to remind you that wherever you go,
and whatever you do,
please stay
arrogant.